for me, I'm such a creature of habit that, and we talked about this openly or even behind the scenes, like doing shows by myself was just something that I always did for years to come up, and then you have to learn how to work with a partner and all that stuff. So there's something when you're on your own, it's like, okay, and it's the summer, it's like 4 hours, blank slate, different show, and there's creativity you could have there, whatever it may be. And then you have to, when we're together, you have to blend it back. And it takes a while to build the camaraderie and chemistry and feeling comfortable with each other. And
no question.
It took maybe a year and a half, whatever it may be, to where we feel like we got in a sweet spot. And then today, after not really, we have not really worked together a lot this summer at all.
Like Mike and Chris. We got the old now.
Right. Unfortunately.
Minus the simulcast, minus the 5-year deals, minus the millions. Yeah, just like Mike and Chris.
A lot of differences there. But, like you said, we've just picked up kind of where we left off before, which is fun, knowing that we could come in and just get back to it.
I think it's funny that you point that out. I think it's a good sign of the relationship of the show, because I don't know if it would have been quite like this when we first started. We were feeling each other out.
Right.
Let's be honest here.
Right.
So I like doing a solo show. I still enjoy the challenge, because I think that's what separates the men from the boys.
Right,
I honestly
do.
Like, if you can get on the air for 4 hours and bang it and not just rely on calls and give thought-provoking content and keep the train moving, I think that's what separates some chops, okay? But I said to you the first break, I said, dude, I think we haven't missed a beat. Like, but the more you have, more fun.
Yeah.
It's just there's more organic moments. Like, it's hard to be funny when you're by yourself. It's just, no, it feels awesome to be back, honestly.
There are also parts of it when you do a show together and the audience listens to that show together. Like, there's a, want to get our thoughts on it. Head to head, like, okay, I could speak on something, but without you there, fine. Or you could speak on something without me there. It's different. So it's nice for us to then talk about something that we've been talking about as the storyline continues for 2+ years or whatever it may be. So either way, fun to be back here doing the show. BT and Sal Show on the Fan is presented by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Mets. And I've been saying it, BT, we referenced the tweet before in case you missed it. Check it out on the free Odyssey app with Steve Cohen giving the support, you know, just saying he still believes in this team.
Let us know he's still awake.
Yeah, well, that's
it's
nice.
Been a couple months.
Could use that from Hal. We'd like to hear that. But yeah, I mean, look, dire straits, losers of 11 of 12. I guarantee you that Cohen is perturbed.
No question.
Guarantee you that. And I guarantee you that there's being pressure that's being felt from Mendoza on down. Those guys got to get back to having fun and go and play baseball, and they got a crappy team coming in the Braves. I don't care what the uniform says, what the hat says. Yeah, the Braves have owned the Mets. Not now. It can't happen now. If the Mets lose this series to Atlanta or lose tonight, then I start to really put it this way. Remember what Zerbiak said about the Knicks and
Pistons?
Yes,
about the chemistry. If they would have lost, then
If they lose to the Pistons, something is really broken or whatever.
Uh-huh.
If the Mets don't pummel the Braves here and get back on a heater, you could throw in the Nats, you could throw in the Mariners as well, I don't care. The next 12 days, if the Mets don't come out of this in a significant way, I'm not talking about 500 ball. I'm talking about 10-2 type run over the next 12. 9-3 at worst. That should be realistic for this group with the caliber of opponent that they're playing. If they don't do that, then I do think it's fair to question that something may be fundamentally wrong or broken within that clubhouse.
See, that's the part where you lose me a little bit here. Hmm. And taking Wally's statement, which you and I talked about.
Yeah.
And he wound up being right because the coach was fired, whatever.
Well, they did beat the Pistons, though.
I understood, but they still got rid of the coach.
Yeah, I know,
you know,
I
they
know.
Stepped away from the NBA Finals, so he really wasn't wrong at the end of the day with that statement. That turned some heads for a guy who works for the network. But why I disagree a little bit here and push back is that I don't think it's as transferable in basketball. And not that there's in baseball. In basketball, if there's a lack of chemistry, a lack of connectivity, I think it's going to show its head a lot more. I think in baseball, again, I hate to say this because I say it's a cliche, like the randomness of baseball. I know it's so tired to say that, but it's true. It's applicable. Like if the Mets, I don't need to see the Mets to go 9-2 or 9-3 in this 12-game homestand, whatever, 12 games, whatever it is. I just need them to, you know, win a series, play more crisp ball, get a little more length from your starters. Hell, is it 12 or 13? Is it 12, you said?
Then 12 games? Next 12
next
games,
12.
Yeah. Three with Atlanta, three with Seattle.
Nationals.
Three or four with the Nats, and then three or four with the Braves, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry.
Seattle, I think, is either way,
definitely
it's 12.
Three. Yeah, and then the Seattle game, the third one, is not at Citi Field. It's at that Field of Dreams, whatever.
Oh, that's right.
That they do there.
That's right. Yeah, Yankees have been in that. All right, so all I'm saying is this. Like, I don't need 9-3. Hell, even if I got 6-6 or 7-5, which is not earth-shattering or needle-moving, maybe emotionally for the Met fan, But depending upon the optics of the 6-6, to me, it could be a stabilizing 6-6.
Right, but then the division, you can't have 12 games come off the calendar and not gain much ground on Philadelphia. I'm thinking big picture here. Okay. I'm thinking I still want to go hard here. And the only reason why I would bring up the chemistry, because I'm not saying it's apples to apples when you're talking about the basketball versus this. But the chemistry last year is what set the Mets apart. It wasn't the talent. Jose Iglesias is not, I mean, I like him as a player. His talent is that far greater. Now, obviously, there is a difference with Vientos from last year to this year. But Pete,
that's the biggest one.
Okay, but Pete's been better this year than he was a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Lindor is still on, I think, on pace for the same numbers, or at least close to it, but he was awful the first 2 months of the year and then took off the rest of the year. He still has the potential to go nuts. Soto's in play here. So chemistry last year was such a big factor, and it has not been a factor this year with a more talented, well-rounded group from almost every aspect, especially the bullpen and maybe the lineup as well. When you bring in a guy like Soto, how can you not get better? So I think that just something would be off if this talented team does not figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, how like pointing out exactly what ails the team, we could differ on. But yeah, I mean, if they finish with 87 wins and they don't make the wild card, or they do and they get busted up in the first round, there's different discussions to have. You know what's crazy, too? Because you mentioned Iglesias, but then you also referenced Pete's production from a year ago. And we know the RBI total was really down. Yeah. That was what was most alarming. And the average went up a little bit from previous years. But he only had 34 home runs. And I was looking this up because, you know, the B-team Sal over-unders for the baseball. Yeah. We could do that tomorrow at some point this week. I don't want to just squeeze it in But I went back to look at all my things. And one of the things that I went with was Pete Alonso over 35.5 home runs. Now, again, last year he had 34. He's only on pace for 36 right now.
And now
the RBIs are higher. The average is higher. The OPS is higher. And after that, but after that blistering start, I mean, I'm sitting there saying, number one, I think Pete could be top three, top four in the MVP. Pete's going to bang 40-something, 44, 45 bombs like the old days. Like, he has really settled into a quiet space in terms of the long ball.
And by the way, I'm just looking at Lindor's numbers here. The difference, though, with Alonso is his homers last year, unimpactful. This year, each home run he hits, it seems, much more impactful than a year ago. So it's not just about the numbers. Yet Lindor's numbers, I'm saying, oh, he's on pace to do what he did last year. He is not, obviously.
No.
The year before, maybe. He has fallen off quite a bit here, specifically as far as the OPS goes, where he was .844 a year ago. He's at .735 right now. He had 33 homers a year ago, 91 ribbies. He's got 21-64. We got basically a month and a half to go, so that's going to be tough sled, and Lindor's had a bad year.
He's had a bad year. I agree. He's had a good first month. He's had a bad year, and defensively, it's the worst I've seen him as a Met. He's not running as much because he's not on base as much. But I gave a number yesterday when Sal was out. We'll get back to these calls, obviously. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the fan. The number was this, Sal. In his last 250 at-bats, 250! I mean, you think about in terms of plate appearances for a guy who plays every day, you're going to get 700-something. 250 is a lot. It's a little less than half. His OPS in the last 250 at-bats is .650.
Yeah, no, it's
been .650.
You can't have it. And I don't want to hear the excuses if he's hurt, either.
If you're playing, produce. I know.
I mean, I respect it.
I do, too.
But you playing like this is doing nobody any good. All right, let's get back to the calls here. BT and Sal on the fan. Anthony is in Old Bridge, New Jersey. What's up, Ant?
What up, Ant?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on.
How are you?
Two things. I want to talk about the Yanks as far as, you know, the prospects and developing, and then baseball as a whole. Because this is something that's bigger than the Yankees, Mets. Like, you know, these guys all are being taught at a younger age how to play baseball differently. And it's now trickled into the professional levels where we all don't enjoy it. Let's call it for what it is. But the players don't, I'm sorry, they're not being taught the right way to play because, you know, fundamentally they're not doing it anymore, and they're locking them up as well from a money standpoint where 5 years in their contract, there's not a good pool of free agency. Like, you know, Juan Soto was great last year, but other than that, it's very thin. So teams, if they're not developing their players, which most teams struggle percentage-wise, there's not ways to fix the Band-Aids with good players in the free agency because they're locking them up like, you know, Roman Anthony getting a 10-year deal when he's 20 years old. Jackson Chourio of the Brewers getting a 10-year deal. I mean, there's no way to get a Giambi. There's no way to get these guys to fill the holes that teams need. And it starts, you know, with them being so young at 20, 18, 19. You know, Bobby Witt, you're never going to see these names in free agency. Like, they're never going to be Mets. They're never going to be Yankees. So if we can't develop players all around, we're all going to watch bad baseball, and that's...
Well, you got Soto. I mean, you just got Soto. He's 26 years old.
Yeah, yeah, no, but Anthony, you can't buy a team in free agency anyway. You have to draft
and develop. No. I'm not saying you buy a team. You fix the holes. But the problem is Soto was the first guy in a very long time where you could say, okay, we can add this guy, and he's a significant improvement from other players. Those guys like Soto, you said, they're not going to be there.
But that's why go nuts for a guy when he is there like that.
No. I'm not disputing that. I'm making a point that overall, when you have an issue of finding guys like that, like guys like, you know, Vientos, Austin Wells, like they give you that like flash in the pan, but then they don't do it long term. Like there's an issue there overall that's probably, you know, it's making baseball hard to watch. It's not just a Yankee and Met problem. Like, across baseball, like I said, the averages are so bad.
100%.
What we worry about is OPS.
There are inconsistencies around the sport.
I'm 34.
Anthony,
I'm 34. I'm not that old.
You nailed it. And it's a sport-wide problem, and thanks for the call, which is also why I'm not going nuts here. This is not just the Mets and Yankees. Everybody's inconsistent. Look at the Dodgers and all they did in the offseason. They're what, five games, six games better than the Mets? They're not beating the world up, and they're not on fire the way that everybody expected them to be. So think about it. It is inconsistency throughout the course of the sport. Look at Atlanta, who locked up. Everybody was, oh, my God, the Braves. They get all this young talent. They're locking them all up with team-friendly deals. Now you look at it and say, good God, they're locked into all these contracts. I'd rather blow this thing up.
What's Michael Harris hitting, too?
Yeah, dude, that's what I mean. He's been brutal. Awful.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I was just jotting down some names, both Yanks and Mets, and let's run through this real quick. So Volpe, Dominguez, Wells, Vientos, Alvarez, Beatty, Acuna. I'm going to leave Ben Rice off there because I think he's definitely going to stick. What position he plays, we'll see. But give me your opinion. These are all young players. In 3 years, do you think Volpe's definitely on the Yankees? Remember, Lombard's a shortstop.
When does his contract run out?
Well, he's got a bunch of arbs, pre-arbs, so he's got years.
Yeah, I think the Yankees are going to do, as long as Cashman's here, they're going to ride Volpe into the ground as long as he's here, so yes.
Okay, I agree. I think they can maybe move him to second if Lombard's the real deal, but I think he'll probably be here. Yeah, right. Dominguez here in 2-3 years.
No.
I probably agree with you.
Now that goes opposite of Cashman's going to ride it out. I just don't think Dominguez is good.
Or he's used with a big time arm to make a big trade this offseason, which is possible as well.
So here's when I say he's not good, okay, I believe in his speed and I do still believe in his bat, but think about how far we've come here, where if you do believe in his bat, it's from one side of the plate, and even that, his one thing was supposed to be his power, and that hasn't been there. He does not have a position. He can't play left field, he certainly can't play center field. He's a DH at this
point. But we don't know if he can't play center. Because these dopes aren't putting him in the position that he was drafted in or signed in.
Well, why do you think he can't play center? Or he's not being put in center?
I mean,
do the math.
You think they're that married to Grisham for $5 million a year? Do you think that he can't?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, have they seen enough evidence? Where the hell's the evidence?
Look at him and left. What makes you think he's going to be better in
center?
But
he was playing center in the minors is what I'm saying. He was playing pretty well. Either way, and by the way, Dominguez has 20 steals. Like, he's doing some things of value, but left field is a disaster. So, Austin Wells, 2 to 3 years. You think he's definitely here?
Oh, no. He's another one. What the hell's happened to him?
I don't know, man. I'm very disappointed in him.
You mentioned the Alonso numbers. I've had him over 17 and a half homers for the year. Is he still stuck on 15?
No, he's got more than that. He's got more than that.
Did Wells hit one? Where's he
at? He's got more than that.
I think he's had 15. Did he hit his 16
yet? I'm pretty sure he's got more than 15. Not a ton more. Make you sweat this out, hopefully, till... well, not really.
He's got 15.
He's still on 15?
Yes.
Dude, he's been sitting on 15 for a while.
He's just at 208, though.
That's what bothers me, Hoff and Sal. Like, to me, geeky, but like his approach is out of whack. He misses so many fastballs at the letters, and I love his swing, and I think he's a good catch. Either way, I don't know if he's here. That's the point. Vientos, 2 to 3 years. You think he's here?
No chance. 2-3 months, he won't be here. No.
Beatty, 2 to 3 years. You think he's here?
No.
Acuna.
And if he is Beatty, it's going to be as a backup.
Bouncing around a little bit. Super sub kind of. I don't even see him as a super sub because I think that they would want somebody with speed as that super sub guy. Acuna, 2 to 3 years. Don't take
probably
a
not.
Throw a dart. Who the hell knows? Alvarez? I don't know.
I don't know.
So
if I was a catcher, you'd lean more probably, but Hell knows.
Think about all these names. Volpe, first round pick. Dominguez, number one prospect in the team. Wells, top 10 prospect. And Dominguez, one of the top prospects in baseball. Vientos was an October demon a year ago. Alvarez was the number one prospect in baseball. Beatty came with incredible acclaim, and so did Acuna, not as much as Beatty, but I've left out. I think Mauricio could be here in a couple years. Yeah. I think he's one who could stick. Anyway, that's nine guys, and we could be completely wrong. But more guys will be gone than will remain. So it's just hard. And this is what the caller brought up. You know, you better draft and develop better because most of these guys you ain't hitting free agency when they're 25. Soto's obviously rare. Time for, and the barbecue was hot last night, Sally boy. The meat of the order for the Yankees as they cranked out a ton of bombs, bunch of home runs. Obviously, Judge did not go deep, but he had a hit in a ribby. Bellinger with a home run. Stanton, he stays hot. He's hitting 280. He had a home run, couple of hits, two hits for Ben Rice as well. Ben Rice, but even I saw one of his outs to left field was a rocket. He does hit the ball hard. And then Jazz with a bit of a meaningless tack on. But there you go. So the meat of the order was doing some damage for the Yankees last night. And when you're looking for the meat for your order, choose Boar's Head. Committed to craft since 1905.
Just checking on some of the quotes from Aaron Boone as he does the Talking Yanks podcast on Tuesday. He's saying that Fried is not, any of his struggles, not tied to the blister, which I have a hard time believing. I know that the Yankees are saying he's healthy and no blister issues. I was at that game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching, now maybe I was watching more than Boone, because I actually stayed longer than he was. I wasn't planning on staying there for the whole game. He gets tossed early. I'm like, hey, you're leaving, but I got to sit here through this garbage on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. But if you watch Fried closely, he's like, he's messing with his hand on his sleeve. Like, to me, it was just indicative of some sort of issue going on with his hand. But we'll take the skipper's word for it. Either way, and then Boone, there was something else that he said from there. I was talking about using Devin Williams in high leverage spots, that obviously the plan is not to do that moving forward.
That's what he said?
He said the idea is to use him in lower leverage situations moving forward, but you can't always dictate that. Just like the other night, they weren't obviously looking to throw him to the Wolves. The game goes to extra innings. What are you supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Game's in 10 innings. Your starting pitchers haven't gone more than 5 innings in 2 weeks or whatever it's been.
Yep.
You do the math. 3 guys aren't available. You just use 4 more. So at some point, he's going to have to pitch. It just was unfortunate that it was a high-leverage spot. Yankees have been playing too tight of games here as of late.
I would not trust him at all, man. I don't trust him a lick. I don't trust him as far as I can throw him at this point. He's spooked by New York City.
Yeah.
He just doesn't fit him.
I know. And there was some thought that people immediately knew with Devin Williams when he first made his way with the Yankees and all that stuff. And I'm like, well, how come? Because the Yankees have had this problem for years where they'll go get guys.
Sonny Gray jumps out to mind.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of them.
Just based on,
hey, some guys don't fit.
This guy's got a great ERA. Bring him on in.
Man.
But then they get to New York and it's like, oh. Well, there were some people who immediately realized that Williams was not cut out for New York. And obviously the performance has indicated that. That's something to me. I don't know how you do that, but you would think by word of mouth. I know, but BT, come on, it keeps happening. You're like, there's a different element. Get to talk to the guy. You have people that know him. Forget about the numbers or his arm angle or his velo or his spin rate. Get the between the ears.
Yeah, but that's hard. I mean, that's easier said than done. Now, I think the great organizations find a way to do it a little bit more. And the Yankees right now are not a great organization. They're a good organization. They've dropped off, as we know. And they got a lot of problems, as we've documented for basically years, but certainly a couple of weeks here, with real energy. You know, the only thing about Devin Williams, I stand by, he's just not a New York guy. It's not working out. But I do have to give him a little credit in this regard. Like, if he was like Ed Whitson or Sonny Gray or Carl Pavano, his start was so bad, he would have never found the ability to center himself and have basically 2 months where he was phenomenal, where he was Devin Williams.
Which is why I don't think it's totally over. I don't think he's cut out for New York, and he's certainly never going to be their closer again. But I still think he could be somewhat effective. You just got to build him back up again. He already proved that he could do it.
Yeah, he got mix and match properly.
He got torched again. That's on Booney. All right, back to the calls here. Mad Mike calling from Charlotte. What's up, Mad Mike?
Hey, guys. How we doing today, all right?
Good. How are you?
Hello, Mike.
Hey, yeah, I'm good. Glad to have you back. Look, I'm feeling all the energy and everything, and your excitement and everything. But I have lost all optimism for this team. They have just sucked me dry. I just don't see any hope with this Mets team.
The Mets, okay, yes.
Yeah, talking about the Mets here. So, I don't see how it's going to end. I think that they're going to let us down. I agree with what you said, Sal. I like your plan. Let's call some of these pitchers up. Let's see what we got. You know, use them like this. This starting rotation is an absolute mess. Montas is a disaster. I don't know what Stern saw with him. Senga's the king of you know, walking everyone four innings. Clay Holmes is pitching. He's going to go four innings. I just don't see the end game in this. I'd like to see him call some guys up and see what we got for the future.
Yeah. It's got to be a nice balance, Mike, and thank you for the call. We appreciate you checking in. Look, BT, if they don't get it turned around, David Stern's going to be front and center here because we didn't love the rotation coming into the year. And they obviously didn't do much to address, they didn't do anything to address the trade deadline for whatever reason may be, sure. That's why I was kind of like with both teams, I'm not overly excited. I thought that each team could have gone over the top. Now, who would that have been? Alcantara? I have no idea. Somebody else? They didn't go over the top. They valued more so holding on, both the Mets and Yankees, holding on to certain things. It wasn't just, oh, look at who they got. It was, look at what they didn't give up.
Yes, and which was a big part of it.
Yeah, but that's a big problem because if you're giving up more, that means you're bringing back more. The Phillies gave up a ton, whatever their prospect was to go get Duran. Ask anybody right now in Philadelphia if they give a crap about that prospect. They're all excited about Johan Duran because he's the missing piece.
I think their timeline's different, though, Sal. Understood. Between Schwarber, well, between, obviously, Bryce.
It shows you the aggression.
Trey Turner.
San Diego, same thing. Yeah. Now, was there that definitive starter? I don't believe that there was, but it doesn't mean that just because it wasn't available at the deadline, the Mets couldn't have done something about it in the offseason.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is you talk about, you know, the blowback, for lack of a better description, for Stearns, if this thing doesn't get righted here, pertaining to the starting pitching. Now, the trade deadline is one thing. Not getting one could sabotage the entire season. But we got to be fair. Like, I didn't love the way they built the staff. I didn't think it would be that good coming in, just like I didn't think it would be that good last year. But it was. And I had to respect the plan. I'm like, all right. I mean, you piece it, you glue, you spit, you stick it together. I'm like, not how I would do it, but you almost got to the World Series, man. So I had to respect it. And there was validation based on the year one results that his plan was working, which is why I didn't crush him in year two, because I'd sound unfair to the man based on what happened in year one.
Correct. Now, I am a believer in building a rotation more so the way that he did as opposed to throwing a ton of money. But you could also say that going in with, hey, if they need a starter, they'll go get one at the deadline. They did not do that. Also, he brought in Montas. Not one of us in this town would have brought in Frankie Montas.
Oh, my God. I didn't want the Yankees to do it when they did it. I crushed him.
Of course. So then, especially after seeing him with the Yankees, that was the one I was like, if they could turn this guy around.
Dude, it's 2 years. It's not just one plus an option. I think both years are guaranteed.
So they're going to have to figure something out. And they're going to have to dip into the minor league system. There's a lot here that's still at play where it could work out. Same thing with Clay Holmes. Hey, it's a great idea. But remember, you're adding now a reliever turned starter on top of a staff that doesn't have a true ace, with Manaea has been had an injury history. Kodai Senga the year before barely pitched, if at all. Like, there were some issues that were inherently there anyway. Now, the Griffin Canning thing,
he gets hurt.
Tyler Miguel, I don't love anyway.
Yep.
I give him credit for building a bullpen, but now that bullpen's being overtaxed because none of the starters could go more than four freaking innings. So that's going to be on David Stearns to figure out the pitching part of it. And then also the lineup. Like, it's not just one thing with the Mets. It's multiple things with the Mets. Point is, I don't think it's as far away as the caller thought from turning it around.
Yeah.
But there's some work to do here with the Mets.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. And when you say there's multiple things wrong with the Mets, that's why I also said there's multiple things wrong with the Yankees, which is why I also said to start the show that there's more bad things right now with the Yankees and Mets than there are good things.
Bruce is in Yonkers. What's up, Bruce?
Yeah, gentlemen, love the show. Just what you were talking about before, by coincidence, that's what I was going to talk about. Since the starters are only going 5 innings today, right? Why does every team just go one inning each with four relievers? That makes it, wouldn't it make more sense?
Well, but Bruce,
two guys go 2 innings.
Yeah.
Even one guy go 3, and then the closer.
Well, but Bruce, hold on, Bruce. It's an original, semi-interesting thought, but the problem is you can't script it where everybody does their job for one inning. What if one guy doesn't have his stuff? I think it was Keith the other night saying it was a very good point. Like, it was definitely Keith, because Cohen was out, and it was Gelbs, and it was Keith. Yeah, the Brewers series, where he said something along the lines of, you know, the more relief pitchers that you use, you know, the more risk you're taking that one of those dudes doesn't have it that night.
Right.
Which is the problem.
You need four or five guys to be perfect.
Bingo. I mean,
the odds of that happening versus one guy, and thank you for the call, Bruce, one or two guys, it's just the odds are not in your favor. hey, here we go. We got it mapped out. Yankees or Mets, whatever. Starter goes five innings, have a one-run lead. Good luck, 6, 7, 8, 9. Like, you felt that way all weekend long with the Mets. Jeez, just hang on here. Get it to Rodgers, Helsley, Diaz. But the hope would be to tack on some runs. Because, you know, with a one-run lead, now not only do you need three guys to be perfect, there is no margin for error. If they had a 5-3 lead, 6-4 lead, whatever, and Helsley gives up a run, not the end of the world. Okay,
you can work around it.
You could live with not all three guys being perfect. You could have two guys being perfect and then one guy giving up a run, but you still have the lead. When you have no margin for error and you need three or four guys to be perfect behind your starter, that is a recipe for disaster.
It is, and it has been so far. And hopefully it changes for both of these teams here. Obviously talking about the Mets now. But, you know, the bottom line, I would think, like, it's a no-brainer. You got to be more disgusted with the Mets offense than the Mets pitching this year.
Yeah, I think the problem is the pitching overachieved in the first half. But by the way, remember, the pitching overachieved without Manaea in the rotation,
yep.
Without Montas, we didn't know what he was going to be at that point. We could assume, but still, he was supposed to be a starting pitcher in that of the starting five in that rotation. He wasn't there. Senga ended up getting hurt, and then they were getting healthier in the second half, thinking Manaea's back, Senga coming back, Montas back. Like, that's got to be better than what they were throwing out there. And it hasn't been. And that's what carried them. But yes, me personally, for a team that was built to mash, they have done anything but that. Lindor's been terrible. Soto's been terrible to his standards and at the very least inconsistent. Alonso was an MVP. Yeah. Now he's back to being an average Pete.
Vientos
has been a total bust. Alvarez been a bust.
Yep.
Beatty, who'd you met? Nimmo's been inconsistent at best.
Well, we didn't agree on everything going into the season, but the one thing we definitely agreed on is like, hey, whatever the Mets are going to do this year, it's going to be driven by their offense.
Yeah.
Call of the day with Brandon Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Charles calling from Rockland County. What's up, Charles?
Hey, what's going on, BTN, Sal? First of all, Sal, I want to say, past couple weeks, the thing is the first time I've heard you be so optimistic about the Yankees, which is, as a diehard Yankee fan, it's nice to hear that, as someone else is on my side on this. But anyways, getting to the point about Aaron Boone, literally what you guys are saying, this is not his fault. I'm sorry. I think Aaron Boone, BT, like you said before the break, if he was on another team, I think he would be such a much better manager because he has the ability to manage a team. He's not being able to. They're not letting him actually manage the team. It's all analytics, and they're not letting him do his job. And if they gave him a week, 2 weeks to just show, Aaron, you got the reins here. You do what you want to do. I can guarantee that the Yankees' outcome would be so much better than with what's going on right now.
Yeah,
he's literally being a puppet and insufferable.
BT and Sal on the Fan. You have it. Caller of the day, 888-808-1019. The number to call. Been a fun show, BT, being back together. Fast show, moving right along here. And obviously, you know, we'll have more to react to tomorrow as it pertains to the Mets, who will be back in action. Look, both teams need to win tonight in the worst way. Yanks win last night was great. They got to keep it going against the Twins. I fully expect that they will. Same thing with the Mets. They got to get back on track here, coming back home and take care of the Braves. One thing we didn't touch upon is the NFL stuff. And I know we're both excited about this. I watched it over the course of the weekend. I was excited on Friday going into the weekend to see the football. I think it lived up to the hype. I don't want to get nuts and get ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah.
But there is realistic reason to me to be optimistic. For about Jackson Dart, we could get into. Even with the current Giants stuff in that defense and certainly the current Jets stuff and Aaron Glenn, I'm excited for football season.
There you go. You're joining me because I was saying this for a couple of months. Yeah. The word I've used is, without going nuts, I'm bullish on the possibilities of the New York football season. And anytime you get a new regime and it's a hire that you're inspired by, like Aaron Glenn, and listen, we were also inspired by Robert Saleh, although they're two very different people. Yeah. I'm not even close. But there's reason for energy and optimism. Then you just see the way he runs the show. He is no nonsense. Like I said, he ain't playing. I mean, Aaron Glenn ain't playing around.
But there were still penalties on Saturday. It needs to get cleaned up.
But did you see the way they were dressed? You sit your ass down. Yeah. You get over here. I'm going to light you up. He is not apologizing. He is from the parts that you see. The thing about Aaron,
I thought Sauce looked good.
Yeah, he did.
So maybe the different way that they're using him will make him actually be the top corner in the sport.
They had some eye candy. They threw to them in terms of pre-snap motion. They threw to the fullback. Now something else. I think the Giants with Dart could be very interesting as well. But that's a deeper conversation.
Well, that's not going to happen anytime soon.
No. Although Abdul Carter looks absolutely frighteningly good. The thing I tweeted this last night, we didn't get into it real fast here. Breece Hall. All right, so there's a thought that the Jets might trade Breece Hall. And I don't understand the reaction from so many Jet fans who are like, oh my God, there's no way you can trade Breece Hall. First of all, Breece Hall has not been the same player since he ripped up his knee in Denver a couple of years ago. That Breece Hall for the first, whatever it was, six, seven, eight games, I think it was six or seven, is a very different player. Breece Hall, let everybody in on a little secret. Breece Hall has zero vision. Breece Hall, and there's film to back that up, but you just go search it if you want. Just take my word or don't and look for it. Breece Hall, I don't mean you, Sal. I mean everybody else out there. Like, Breece Hall just did his damage because he ran away from people. He's not the same guy athletically once he ripped up his knee. And without the vision, I'm not saying he's not good or without purpose, because I think you could throw to him, and I do like the dynamics of a three-man backfield for this particular team. But you're not going to re-sign him next year. You're not going to get Breece Hall. I don't even think you would tag him. I wouldn't tag him. Not for a running back. So if somebody wants him and I could get something decent or a receiver back, I would trade Breece Hall. I don't understand the pushback. It makes no sense.
I hate to even go here, but I'm going to say it because I feel it. Without knowing. I don't know. I'm going to be clear about that. Do you think Breece Hall is the type of player who Aaron Glenn wants on his football team?
I hate to straddle the fence. I can't give you an answer yet. I don't. I lean maybe towards no based on some tweets over the year.
Bingo.
Maybe. But I want to be fair to Breece.
Me too.
I don't know for sure.
I like him as a back, and I hope that the Jets keep him, and he goes nuts. Just to be clear. I get the feeling, based on some of the stuff that he said, based on some of the stuff that we've seen, the way he's operated in years past, I don't think he's a fit. Remember, this is an extension of Bill Parcells here.
Yep.
No softies allowed. And I do think there's an element to Breece Hall that, to me, is maybe a little soft. I don't even
soft? Want, you mean like dancing before he hits the hole? No, or just perspective?
I think maybe both.
Okay, go ahead.
Again, explosive player, fully healthy. You see the game changer he could be.
Maybe it's been a while, by the way.
I know. Mm. Maybe I'm off on that. But all those things you mentioned, the injury, some of the stuff that he said, and some of the stuff he's done, all that, to me, it just feels like he's not a fit for what is going to be a very difficult, rough environment in relative world in today's day and age under Aaron Glenn, which I like. I like that. I think Braylon Allen fits that mold and is an absolute freaking beast.
He is.
I think, Breece, there's an element of softness there that I'm not sure fits what Aaron Glenn is trying to do with the Jets.
Well, we'll ultimately get the answer, and even if he's not traded, I'm not saying he's the RB1 for the rest of the season. Like, Braylon Allen's knocking down the door. Yeah. He's going to get a lot of touches. Justin Fields is going to run. Their third running back is pretty good as well. I think they'll throw the football a little bit. Again, it's still fairly early. Let me tell you, though, an observation, and it's going to sound like crazy, crazy people talk, but the Jets have a chance to have one of the best offensive lines in football.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like ridiculous based on the inability to do the most basic stuff for over a decade. Dude, they got three first-round picks up there.
Yeah.
And Tippmann is good, and Simpson is good, and Olu looked really good. And, I mean, they got a chance to really dominate the trenches.
They built it inside out. Now, if they only had a quarterback that could throw the football, we'd really be talking. So what are you thinking, like 12 wins?
Yes, no.
No, I mean for the Jets and Giants.
Oh. I
We're
think
upset
the
about
Jets...
New York football for what, 12 wins?
I thought you were having a little fun here. Me getting a little bit giddy with my Jets, as I always do. By the way, that's all right. I would say that, I'll give you actual both teams. I think that the Jets have a chance to go 9-8. I do. I think the Jets have a chance to go 9-8.
Okay, best case you're saying? Like, if everything,
best case, I would maybe even say 10-7. Like, I don't think it's incredible for the Jets to maybe mess around to be the second best team in the division.
Right.
I think Miami's going backwards.
Right. New England, I mean, who knows?
The Vrabel, I like. I think I think the Jets, their schedule's fairly benign. From a Giants perspective, it's easy to look at the schedule and say, how the hell are they going to win anything? But I think that their defense, their pass rush, they had a good defense last year in terms of what they could do up front, but they never had leads.
And also can't stop the run. That's a big problem.
Well, I think it's going to be different this year with Abdul Carter and Dexter. Now you got Burton. It's a little different now. See, if the Giants could get a couple of leads, and I don't mean 24-3, just if they can just, if it one score games, now all of a sudden it makes them less one-dimensional. I would say, it's going to sound ambitious. I think the Giants could maybe mess around and win 7?
Yeah, okay, but still.
I do.
I mean, think about what we're talking
maybe
about.
Maybe even 8-9?
I mean,
I believe in Dak?
But we're all saying we're excited. No, I don't. I think,
exactly.
I said this the other day, I think you can make a case the Giants go 2-0 out of the gate. They can beat the Commanders. They can beat the Cowboys. I could even make a case, now it's going to take a lot to get there, that they could be the second-best team in their division. Year of regression for the Commanders, who are older.
McLaurin wants out. Yeah, that's got to tell you something about the Commanders.
It's an older team. I love Daniels, but still, the older team. And the Cowboys, Schottenheimer, like, come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, forget
and they
about
seem
that.
Like a mess with Parsons, all that's going on there. But even with that being said, I don't think they're anywhere close to being a legitimate playoff team.